Our guest on this latest episode of Soundtracking is an actor who made his name portraying one of the most iconic frontmen ever to have graced a stage. Sam Riley's performance as Ian Curtis of Joy Division in Control was, quite simply, stunning. And perhaps informed by his own experiences of playing in his own band, 10,000 Things. Now, as you'll hear in a moment, Sam is not only a great lover of music, but also absolutely cracking company. But before that, we have an offer from our very good friends at Grass & Co, a premium range of products that blends the highest quality 100% natural CBD with therapeutic botanical ingredients. Grass & Co's organic CBD and botanical formulations have been specially created to bring balance to your body and mind with the most delicious flavours. Now, I've genuinely been using these for the past few months, and I have to say the effects are quite astounding. Now, I know for a lot of people who've already tried CBD oils, they think the challenging taste is something you just have to put up with. However, Grass & Co have addressed this very issue. Their CBD is blended with organic botanical ingredients including ginger, turmeric, orange, ashwagandha, chamomile and mint for the smoothest flavours. As with all supplements, CBD will affect everyone differently. Start low and steadily build your dosage every day so you find the balance that works with your body. The Grass & Co. Calm range brings tranquility to your day with CBD consumable oils, nourishing body oils and peaceful pillow sleeps. Now, I've just moved over from their Ease range, which I loved, to their Calm range, and I have to say, it just makes getting through my busy life a little easier. I use it every morning and every evening to feel a little less anxious and overwhelmed when I'm really busy with trying to balance kid stuff and work. Grass & Co. CBD oils contain no traces of THC, which means that all the CBD products are totally legal to buy, consume and supply within most EU countries. Now, you can get 20% off by going to grassandco.com/soundtracking. That's grassandco.com/soundtracking. Grass & Co. Life enhanced by nature. And so to the adorable Sam, who can currently be seen appearing alongside Angelina Jolie in Maleficent, Mistress of Evil. There's only one place to start, really, and that's with Joy Division. We're here to talk about you.
Yeah, love it.
You know what? We've not had many actors on Soundtracking, but there's so many areas that we can navigate you in music.
Okay.
Which don't look so worried. It's fine.
Okay.
Because I think, well, a lot of people won't know that you were a rock star for a while before you...
Rock star's a very kind way of...
Well, you were in a band and you released a record.
Well, that's true.
You know,
and
so
I acted like a rock star.
That's half the band.
That is half of it.
I'm married to one, so well.
Yeah, of course you are. Yeah,
but so you know, it's like I get it. But that background of music, obviously, something that how far does that go back in terms of making music and music being kind of part of your DNA, I guess. And
I think from what I can remember watching on Live and Kicking Paul McCartney playing something and my mum saying, well, he used to be in a band, and I'd got the Frog Chorus was the very first record I ever got.
What's
yeah.
it?
and Bad. It was my sixth birthday. I got that and Bad, the whatever, the disc. And then my mum and dad had the White Album and Abbey Road. And we really loved like Birthday and Back to USSR. But as soon as Year Blues started, mm-hmm. it just terrified me and my brother as kids. You know, it's really like, you know, screaming, I feel lonely, want to die, you know. Don't. We were like, really? Adults feel like that? Yes, I'm lonely. And we both started playing guitar, me and my brother, when we were about 8 or 9. And, you know, when we were writing music at home and things since we were little, I guess.
What point did you think about it being a career then and sort of being in bands and going,
I dreamt of it. I mean, my brother was he was more musical. I was always secretly the lovey. They call me Glory Boy, which was like a piss take because I would be the dancing, you know, I would be up for like selling the stuff, doing all the necessary moves on stage, pumping the amplifier and being a Burke. But they were all, you know, musicians, proper musicians. So my brother loved Blur and all the other bands at that time, but I loved Oasis, you know. I think I loved Liam and Noel more than I loved them. The music, there was something, you know, at that time there were so many boy and girl bands.
Yeah.
That to have someone who would, you know, come and say they were fucking shite, you know, or whatever, was like electric, you know. And I was at a public school where they used to give me shit for having an accent there. I mean, back home, they used to give me shit for not having an accent.
Yeah.
But I really, you know, I think I used to wander around with my school uniform like the monkey walk, you know, like. Thinking I was
you wanted to be
Nebworth was my first gig I went to watch, and we were in a school band with a lot more. It was all about the attitude, really.
Well, it's kind of really interesting because then going into Control, taking on that and just absolutely nailing it, you know, in terms of that performance, Ian Curtis.
Thank you. And
it was really interesting because I was reading some stuff where you said you kind of knew a couple of the songs, but you weren't a massive fan and you didn't know that much about him or the band, really, which, thinking back now, do you think that was a good thing? Because say it had been something like...
I think I would have struggled if it had been a hero of mine.
Yeah, like playing Liam. You'd be like, shit.
Well, and the other thing about... Yeah, that would have been... Hold on, secretly.
That's a great idea. We've had the documentary. Now we need the biopic. Yeah, and Sam to play Liam.
They would have said Pete Doherty. I used to get that a lot. No, I didn't really, you know, weirdly, we used to play in a pub in Leeds called the Primrose. And we after one of the first gigs we did there, the next time we played, they'd written Ian Curtis fronts the Rolling Stones. I wasn't sure whether to be offended by this because I had no idea who he was. And they said, well, that's the singer of Joy Division, you idiot, you know. It must have helped, I think, not really knowing. But it was weird. I mean, it's only 12 years ago, but it was quite hard to get hold of stuff. I mean, A, there isn't very much. That helps as well. There's no really recording of Ian's talking. There's no footage of him in an interview environment.
Yeah.
You know, if you're playing John Lennon or Liam or something, everyone has very much a, you know, they know everything. Yeah. They know how they moved, how they talked, their mannerisms. So I was, aside from the performance, which was just a case of like... That was just never off the telly, you know. I bought a black market DVD of the few live performances, the TV televised ones, and like camcorder footage from certain gigs.
Yeah,
I mean, I was it was fear that drove me to do it relentlessly.
Fear of what, though?
Embarrassment of letting myself down or the people that The more I did this, the more I realized how many fucking diehard Joy Division fans there are. Yeah. It wasn't, and it was a weird process because I went into the audition thinking I've got an advantage here. I can sing.
Yeah.
And as soon as I got in,
like that,
as soon as I got into the room, they said, "No, you won't sing. You will definitely mime. We'll never find actors that can play the band." So, you know, I sang in the audition, but they said that would never happen. It wasn't until we were rehearsing, we had 2 weeks to learn to mime to the tracks.
Yeah.
And it was the actor Harry Treadway who'd done a weird movie called Brothers of the Head.
Yeah.
Where they'd done everything live. And James, who played guitar, never really played guitar, you know. But it worked because he had to look at his fingers and Bernie had to look at his fingers. And for 2 weeks, we were Joy Division. We called each other by the names.
Wow.
And on the last... right before we started shooting, we called Anton into the room and like gave him a beer and said, "Right, just hear us out." And we played a gig, 9 songs. And he called the sound man in and said, "Could we do this?"
Yeah.
And the sound man was like, "Well, you know, if we have to.
If we have to."
And we sort of did it. We play a version of it live to the audience that were there and then play back sometimes to that version that we just played. But the worst thing was we were thrilled that we talked him into doing this. And then we arrived and the first scene we were shooting was She's Lost Control. And there were like 150 extras. And we were like, how can you afford these people? And they were like, "We've got them from the Joy Division forum, fan site forum."
Oh my God.
I literally vomited with anxiety. Like,
oh man.
There was a fan with Ian's face tattooed on his chest in the front row, sort of showed it to me in between. But we realized then, as we were doing it, that we were accepted. You know, in between takes, we play other songs. And after the first one, we thought, "No, we can do this."
They
didn't bottle us. You know.
They almost kind of given you their kind of their
yeah
their...
And Ian's daughter was there in the audience. He's my age, and Debbie, and you know, I had no frame of reference. That helped. Something happened, you know. It took a while to get over it, really, after that.
Did it?
Yeah. I would turn if people said Ian in the street. I would look around.
Wow.
Yeah
I spoke to Anton about it quite a few years ago. I was lucky enough to sort of sit and talk to him just about, you know, why he wanted to make it and kind of his thought process on how he made it and stuff like that. And, you know, the work that he's done with musicians and stuff over the years, sort of thing. I love how he comes to things mainly as a music fan, you know, and you can definitely see that from the way that film was.
And we were, yeah, I mean, we felt a bit like virgins, me and him, to some extent. You know, Samantha Morton played it. The gig scenes is one thing, but
yeah,
you know, it wouldn't have worked without the emotional heart. Yeah. And that was something that she and Alexandra brought to it with their acting experience that Anton and I didn't have. You know, Sammy, there were some moments where she was just like, she'd look at the script and go, "This is eggy." She said, "Would you say that in real life?" I go, "I don't know." And she go, "Let's do it. Let's just try it like
wow,
like this." And it was so, you know, when I found myself like really feeling, you know, it gives me chills thinking about it. You know, like it was really a baptism of something.
Well, that's the great thing about this is now that we get to play some of it and remind people, and people who haven't seen it for a while, or they haven't seen it at all, to go back and check it out. What was really nice as well was we've had Ben Wheatley on twice on the show. He was our first ever episode.
Yeah, I listened to that one.
And we talked about you in the last episode as well, because, well, you've worked with him a couple of times, but on Happy New Year, Colin Burstead, he kind of gave you a bit of a task to write a track.
Yeah.
But I believe you had been out for a couple of drinks when you
Yeah, when I've, you got I've the phone actually call. Stopped drinking since then, after that, after saying yes. That was, I mean, I love Ben Wheatley.
Same.
I've worked with him we worked with each other a third time this year.
Why do you like working with him?
Partly because I feel he believes in me or something. You know, he gave me the job of Steve-O in Free Fire, which was like no one had ever given me a chance to be like wild and, you know, let loose. Yeah. It had always been quite contained. But he saw that, you know, every time he needs an asshole, I'm like the renter rogue for Ben, which some, you know, and, you know, every actor dreams of a contemporary of theirs wanting to work with them more than once, you know. I mean, it's so, but the story with Colin, we were going to do a big budget movie together. I was only going to play a little part, but then whatever happened, the usual bollocks. And so he's not one to stay still. And he wrote me a text message late one night saying, I'm going to do a film version in a week. Like, as in, we'll shoot it over the course of a week or 10 days. It's a version of Coriolanus. I'm going to call it Colin Uranus. And I was like, you know, lols. And then he was like, well. Oh, fuck, yeah. And will your wife be in it? So I got in trouble on this one because I was like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I knew she would want to be in it. And then he told me the story. He'd been at a wedding, I think, where the bride had sung to the groom. And he said it was a mix of like,
you don't know whether it'll laugh
excruciating,
or cry.
Touching, because it's such an honest, you know, embarrassing, beautiful thing to do. And he said, and I think, you know, your character's such a, you know, an asshole, or well, not that word, but, you know, that it would be something really kind of creepy if he sang this song for his mum. Would you write a song for your mum, basically? And I was like, yeah. And there's a scene at the end of, is it Paths of Glory, the Kubrick movie, where Kubrick's wife, who's a German actress, sings to the French soldiers.
Da ließ all sein Hab und Gut und eilte seinem Herzliebchen zu. Ach, bitte, Mutter, bring ein Licht, mein Liebchen stirbt.
I knew the moment in the film, and he said, do you think Alexandra, who's my wife, German actress, would sing at the end? I was like, yeah. I got in so much trouble when I got home, because she's never sung in public before or anything. I mean, I'm at least a show off. But she was really game, and it worked really beautifully. But so I wrote this song, but Ben being Ben, I was like, do you want to hear it? He was like, no, it's okay. We'll just do it like, we'll just do it in front of everyone. When you play it in the film, we'll just
film it.
We'll just film it when you do it. Oh, it was. And I mean, I used to write songs, but I'd stopped doing it. I started doing it again after doing that because.
But oh, that's nice.
Yeah, my Alex encouraged me to do it because I had a period of time where I'd like 16 months where I didn't get any work and I was really, well, depressed basically. But so she said, you know, why don't you do music again? So, but this was the first song that I've done. And yeah, and I played it in front of everybody while filming it. And I was relieved that I'd made it only like a verse and a chorus.
Yeah.
Because it stretched the limits of my piano playing. Anyway.
This is for you, Mum. A rose by any other name is a rose, but Shakespeare never met Sandy or he'd have known. To compare Mum to a summer's day doesn't even come close. And yet I've hurt you more than most. I know you needed me and I let you down. In your hour of need I wasn't around. I wanna repent but I don't know how. So I will try to spell it out. S-A-N-D-Y. I'm sorry for the times I've made you cry.
Oh, yes.
S-A-N-D-Y. I wish I could have been a better child. S-A-N-D-Y. You're the sun and moon in my sky. Soul of this family, and that's why we're all here tonight. We all love you, Sandy. I love you, man.
That's brilliant, though, to have people like someone like Ben, who, you know, he obviously he enjoys working with you, but he sees that in you. He's like, I know who could do that. Sam could do that. So he's almost kind of
Sam's
like...
Sam's drunk enough to say yeah. Yes. To
but he's that. Kind of, you know, he's kind of nudging you towards something that you probably wouldn't have done yourself had he not asked you and encouraged you and pushed you
yeah,
to
and
do
I
it.
Knew that, you know, I trust it's and I trust him, you know, to do it. The yeah. other cool thing about that was that he said there was going to be a folk band in one of the pub scenes. And he said, but I can't afford any of the music. So I need like a pub rock band with free songs. And I was like, my brother has a pub rocks, it's a pub rock band.
Yeah.
And they would happily play their own music. So my brother and his band, the Reach Arounds from Leeds,
great name, are
also in the movies. And also that was weird. There's like the three Rileys doing the music for the Wheatley movie. Yeah. It was great.
I love that, the closing credits scene as well with everybody.
It's beautiful. It's I mean, to be honest, my song's on a soundtrack with Clint and Sal. I mean, how fucking cool is that?
It was great chatting to them both about the score, and you kind of can't get a word in edgeways when the two of them are together as well. They're like,
you're struggling with me as well, aren't you?
It's great. Brilliant. I love it. No, it's a dream, to be honest. But it's that thing where more like when you find someone that there's a kind of connection with on that, and from them working on High Rise together as well, it's kind of that relationship then kind of continues. Free Fire as well was just, what a blast of a film. I loved that film.
Oh, I'm glad.
Oh,
yeah.
God, it's great. I've got one of the posters up in my house.
They were amazing. They were dream posters as well.
What a cast. But what a fun ride.
It was nuts. I mean, we all, you know, this is another thing about Ben, was that we all, you know, with stars like Army and Killian and Brie, who was just about to win an Oscar, to have us all crawling around in the... I mean, no one likes to hear actors complain about their working conditions, obviously, but it was filthy. It was like, it was proper grim. And all of the crew were wearing gas masks and we were just like...
Inhaling
this
everything.
This cannot be good. But we, you know, because it was such an ensemble and because we weren't sure sometimes where he was going to be looking,
yeah.
Everyone lay down in the dirt all day, even if they weren't on camera. And it was such a cool spirit of on that job.
to kind of pull out everyone's like smiley as well, like everyone's personalities within their car. It's just so brilliantly done. And Jeff and Ben's score as well was, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, and they're amazing as well. I mean, to meet these guys as well in the evening, it's you know, collaborative in the best way. And Ben's editing on set while you're doing it. And he'll show you bits if you want, which a lot of directors won't. I mean, I really needed it to just go back to Colin. The first day we were doing so much improvisation and I was really nervous for my wife, because she's not English. And she ended up like blowing me off screen the first day. And I was like, oh, fuck, this is a nightmare. So he like played me stuff in the evening. He was like, you know, it's okay. I'm only going to put the good bits in. So, you know. But
Do you ever have music to help with character, you know, in terms of
Two things, really. I always do a YouTube playlist where I have like things that are, latch onto for Steve-O. There were YouTube playlists of Boston accents, some Jack Nicholson stuff, 70s like documentary footage of the time and things.
Yeah.
And for Free Fire, we had a group playlist. I think it was 1978, the year that the film was set.
Yeah.
So everyone was like, could throw in any song that was 78 onto this shared Spotify list, which I still got. I put No Love Lost, but Joy Division.
So long, sitting here, been hella wanting, waiting for the tick to run. We've been moving around in different situations, knowing that the time would come. Just to see you torn apart, witness to your empty heart. I need it, I need it, I need it. Through the wire screen, the eyes of those standing outside looked in at her, as into the cage of some rare creature in a zoo. In the hand of one of the assistants, she saw the same instrument as they had that morning, inserted deep into her body. She shuddered instinctively. No life at all in the house of dolls. No, 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 no,
And I can't. There was an Elvis Costello, I think.
Oh, nice.
But I mean, Killian is really amazing. Oh, he knows his stuff. Yeah. I mean, like him and Smiley were just like they loaded. They filled it with, I am the slime, Frank Zappa, which is a great tune.
Like kind of competing with each other about who could put on the best music.
Yeah. But there was a bit of competition about the guns on that one as well. Like who had the biggest gun? It was really pathetic.
I was really happy to be able to talk about. I was covering for Simon Mayo and Carmody Mayo, and we were talking about Sometimes, Always, Never on the show.
Yeah.
I loved that film.
Oh, thanks. It's a really beautiful film, isn't it?
It's a gorgeous film.
And that's got a musical connection as well. I forgot.
Edwin Collins doing the score on that as well and shot.
And the producers, were the members of The Farm.
Yeah.
And Bill Nye, who's a big music fan. I mean, the blues mostly. If you go in his car, it's like if you get a lift in his car.
Oh, is he good?
Bob, his driver, has to put up with some very, very loud, very cool music. I mean, you know, it's all Stones and blues. He was like, "Are you a van man?" I was like, "Do I travel in a van?"
You call Van, me a white Van
Morrison.
Man.
I was like, "Oh shit, yeah, of course, yeah, who isn't?"
But what do you think music does in terms of that? You know, that kind of.
I got
know,
to play in that as well at the end. But Elvis Costello wrote. Yeah. Edwin Collins. Yeah. Edwin Collins wrote a song at the end.
Yeah, of course.
That I got to play. And it was two films back to back where I sang at the end. It was like really, really. And he's amazing.
Edwin.
Yeah, he worked with the Cribs, who's a band that I used to go on tour with a lot.
Did you?
Yeah, we toured like three or four times with the Jarman Brothers.
You've dressed yourself in time.
Because the mass needs, mass needs a fire of greed, a fire of greed. A mass needs a plot to me. I don't agree. A mass needs,
We love them so much. They were such good lads. And I'm so, they're still.
Yeah.
I mean, they're poor livers. My God.
Oh, my God. They're like.
I can't believe they're still doing this. Yeah. 12 years later.
But they've kind of like, I remember one of them had a really bad accident at the NME Awards where he like fell on a table and like sliced his back
open. Jumped on his, yeah. Ryan. Yeah, that would be Ryan. Yeah. That's him, yeah.
But then, similarly, I've spent so much time with them over the years at festivals and.
They're such sweet boys.
So nice.
Wakefield. But I think they'd work with Edwin, and he's got this studio that I'd love to visit up north.
Yeah.
And beautiful, yeah, music.
And then Johnny Marr joined the Cribs for a bit as well. That was a bit.
Yeah, that was nuts, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was quite.
Yeah, random, but okay.
Yeah, why not?
We should talk about Maleficent as well, because I loved it. This new one as well has kind of got this, it's just got a really cheeky tone to it.
It's pretty far out, isn't it? Like,
but it's great. But it's like,
yeah, it pushes.
But you got that with the first one in terms of like, you know, this is no Sleeping Beauty kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
No.
It's like it's kind of just pushing stuff away.
I think a lot of that's Angelina, obviously. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible to watch somebody even on a movie that's Disney, where, you know, who are now the owners of all of our souls in the acting business, have that much. Voice, but balls, for want of a better word. I mean, you know, she's really, it's incredible to watch.
Do you have fun doing it?
I really love it. I mean, it's nuts. It's, you know, we shot Colin, Happy New Year, Colin Burstead, and this in the same year.
Oh,
like, so I did there's a big banquet scene in Maleficent 2. We shot Colin in the amount of time it took to shoot the one scene. So to have that sort of, those two experiences within months of one another is pretty, but I love the scale of it. It's just another way of doing it. You know, the collaborative aspect of it is even more impressive on this, because there's literally hundreds of people, craftsmen and women, building these sets in order for everyone to try and, it's always kind of amazing that anything happened, you know. That it gets made.
Because it's got to go through so many.
And she pushes the boundaries, I think. In the first one, you know, what is true love's kiss? And, you know, that there's, you know, that a woman that's been so wronged is why she, you know, could curse a baby or whatever in that case. And this one, you know, she's a humanitarian and progressive and... And I think that, you know, they push a lot of really strong, but I think important messages for our, you know, crazy times.
You can talk about it being a big production, but you still feel those kind of truthful performances coming through and things as well. And there's that bit where she turns around and she goes, "I've missed you." There's just really nice moments in it that
she was instrumental in getting me this part, like, really, the first time. Yeah, I mean, I auditioned for it. This is between us, obviously, but and then I rang my agent and was like, "How did that go?" And they said, "They say you're not Disney material," and we both laughed because we knew that was fucking true.
What do you mean?
We're like, "What? Is it the teeth?" And then, like a week and a half later, my American agent rang me and were like, "Congratulations!" And I was like, "What? How did that happen?" And I think Disney sort of showed her,
yeah,
I don't know why I'm whispering, showed her the tapes of the people that they had in mind.
Yeah.
And she went, "But you must have seen more people than this."
Yeah.
And then she'd seen Control.
Amazing.
And then that got me the gig. And she was been really integral in making sure that she likes our characters and she,
yeah,
likes the rapport that they have, this sort of weird servant mistress
yeah,
relation, but like bickering, playful stuff. So she was like, you know, pushing for there to be more,
yeah,
to be more of it. So I mean, I owe her, really.
Well, that's brilliant on something this size, because you'd never think that that kind of freedom would be allowed in terms of,
it's, you not know, for everyone.
Yeah.
You have to earn it.
Few, yeah, the chosen ones. Where does music sit for you now? What is music for you now in terms of, like, you're writing again, which is great.
Yeah, I am, and I'm going to do something with it. You know,
that's great.
Yeah, because I really missed it when I was doing it, and I have a lot of I had a lot of ideas. I'm going to do something now. You know, we were a really great little rock and roll band, and we had a deal with Domino.
And then Polydor.
And Polydor, and, you know, sorry, Polydor, but, you know, we took the money because we thought, yippee, we don't have to work, you know. But
yeah,
in the end, they didn't like the sound of the album and we didn't like the sound of the album because they tried to, I was going to say polish shit, but that's not there. You know, they tried to change us, and I just want to do something at home, record it as independently as I can, and just, you know,
yeah,
get it out somehow. But I really love doing it, you know, and I'm listening, you know, previously I've been only listening to the same five records, you know.
Which are?
Well, there'd be Elvis Costello. No, not anymore, funnily enough. It didn't age well. I don't know, Exile on Main Street. This is,
yeah,
or the blues and, you know, Otis Redding. Or I love all of these old records. But I've been trying, partly because my son, who's five, refuses to listen to that stuff in the car. He's like, "This is awful," you know, like,
yeah,
"What's this man screaming about?" So I listen to more contemporary stuff, and it started to mean a lot more to me again, and it saved me again from, you know, I was really down about it. You know, it was the longest period of unemployment during my short career, and it was kind of crushing, you know. It was after a project that I'd hoped would do well, and it really didn't, and then the phone stopped ringing, and then it was, you know, it really pulled me out of a rut. So I'm going to do something with it.
That's exciting. Come back and talk to us, and
I will,
talk,
yeah,
about that.
I'll demand you play something for me next time.
Well, we should. What's your favorite 10,000 Things song?
So many to choose from. I suppose, I mean, either from the album, Lover Boy is probably still playable. We did have a song called
It's
Not Cheating.
It's on Spotify. People can listen to all of it. That's
Is it on Spotify?
Yep.
But the EP that we, the first EP that we did, I mean, Food Chain, there was a song called Mummy's Big Plan, which was quite amusing, which I'd probably happily listen to again. Or, Oh No.
We can't play
great.
It all, Sam.
Well, I just play Lover Boy then.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Edith.
So
it was
nice
really good
to chat
to you.
Yeah. And I look forward to what's next. What is next apart from the album?
Rebecca with Ben,
yes,
Wheatley. Radioactive with Rosamund Pike playing.
Yeah.
Pierre Curie.
That's exciting.
Oh, and I robbed a bank of Spain. I did a nuts Spanish job called Way Down, where I played like proper cat burglar stuff, like abseiling through holes in windows. It was my. They were like, "Oh, you seem to enjoy this." I was like, "You've no idea. This is all of that."
Oh, wow.
Highbrow stuff. I want to be Bond.
I watched an old interview with you, and the first thing that you said was, It was around control, and the interviewer had said something about how did you get the gig sort of thing. And you were like, oh, well, I was folding shirts in a shop in Leeds, and they'd already cast Bond and all this kind of
thing. I reckon little sod. The 12 years in the business have beaten that out of me. That's
hey,
confidence.
Still happen, mate.
Still happen.
Still happen.
Well, it's coming up for a time.
Exactly. Lovely chat to you, Jason.
And you.
Thanks,
you.
Love.
She's so chemical, he's organic. They're like different species from different planets. He's a hippie, happy, lover boy from a line of dreamers. And she's a slippy, tricky sex toy from the dark side of Venus. Run away, lover boy, you're not gonna make it. She's gonna take your spirit and she's gonna break it. Run away, lover boy. Run away, lover boy.
Lover Boy by 10,000 Things, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with the fabulous Sam Riley. My huge thanks to Sam for taking the time to talk to us. What fantastic company he is. Maleficent, Mistress of Evil is on general release around the world now. We'll put a Spotify playlist for the show up via edithbowman.com, which is also the place to subscribe to the podcast and catch up with all of our previous episodes, including the two featuring Mr. Ben Wheatley. Also, good news for fans of Control, we have the director Anton Corbin coming up in future weeks. Now, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK, and please do keep spreading the word if you like what you hear. Next up, returning for his second sitting, is a wonderful director, David Michaud, who turned to friend of the show, Nicholas Britell, to score his latest film, The King. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.